Lesson that I know we have all seen news reports about the events in Ukraine and the battles going on there, loss of life and the Russian troops. And just keep in mind, I was back in Russia back in 1990s. At that time, there was a lot of freedom that was exhibited after the wall came down. And we were allowed to teach out in public. In fact, we were allowed to go into schools and we had to deal with the schools that we would go in and during the daytime and we would speak English to them. And so, our form of English, if you call Kentuckian English sometimes, but, in response, we were allowed to use our facilities at nighttime to teach classes. And we were allowed to advertise publicly, and that has changed a lot since that time period. And so you have the Christians in Ukraine, and there are a number of congregations there. And also the Christians of Russia that are being affected by all this, what's happening in those two countries. And so just keep them in your prayers. We have the luxury of knowing today that we can come and worship bright sunny day in a nice building and we can leave here and go home and eat and not have any distress at all as far as from those outside. And there are those today, they're about 6-7 hours ahead of us, who may not know if they'll be alive tomorrow or what freedoms will I have tomorrow. And so there are some that have been displaced already, have had to leave their homes. And there are some that are simply hunkered down. And there are some that have taken up the arms to fight against what they view as the oppressors in this case. And so be thankful for the freedoms we have and keep them in your prayers. I want us to look, though, at a passage out here in Genesis. I want us to go to Genesis to talk about him, about Jacob this morning. Jacob is obviously a big part of his life, as a big part of the book of Genesis. From about the 25th chapter all the way through Genesis, the 37th chapter, Jacob is really one of the central figures here in Genesis. And then, not so much, but still mentioned a number of times in this book. And as you get to chapter 47, of course, this is after that basically a lot of things happened in Jacob's life after the famine. And Joseph, through the, you know, his brothers go to Egypt to buy grain, and Joseph goes through the process of testing them. And eventually, though, they reveals to his brothers who he is, and he tells them to go back and get his family, bring them all to Egypt. And so that's where we're at there, that Jacob and all the family is at Egypt. And as you read about this here, we find this event that just stood out when I read about it, as far as you have Jacob before Pharaoh. And in that situation, we find Pharaoh and said to Jacob, how old, oh boy, that's too dark, you know, how old are you? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. And they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers and the days of their pilgrimage. And as you look at this here, it's just one of those meetings you start thinking about there. You have Jacob, one of the great patriarchs of the Bible, meeting Pharaoh, which in essence, the boss of Joseph, his leader, the one who put Joseph in the position of being second charge of Egypt. And this conversation of Jacob just kind of says here, your life for me has been rough. And he mentioned 130 years. Now, in relationship to years, just kind of keep in mind, when we look at somebody 130 years, somebody lived to be 130 years today. We would like to say, man, you have lived a long life. But again, it's relative, isn't it? Because you think about Abraham, he's mentioned that Abraham lived to be 175 years of age. And not only that, but also that his father, Isaac, lived to be 180 years of age. So really, he has not attained to the years of either one of his ancestors at this point. And as you think about this, that maybe he's attributing his short days because of all the trials that he'd gone through in life. And it just got me thinking about the different troubles Jacob had faced. So we want to just look at some of these. And then as we end the lesson, talk about some lessons we learned from this. And the first one is, as you look here, we realize that his birth. Jacob was born a twin. Now, being born a twin is not necessarily bad, but as you read here in Genesis, the 25th chapter, and most of this I did not put on my slides, so if you just take your Bible and take it to Genesis 25th chapter, and we're going to read a lot of this here, And in verse 21, it said, now Isaac pleaded the Lord for his wife, because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea. And Rebekah's wife conceived, but the children struggled within her, and she said, if all is well, why am I like this? So she went to inquire the Lord, and the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two people shall be separated from your body. One people will be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb, and the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over, so they called his name Esau. And as you look at this here, you find this battle inside the womb. Now, I know Regina had three children, and sometimes you look here and see, talk about the baby moving inside the womb. This is the area here that us men really don't understand. We don't wait for us to really comprehend. But I take it that a lot of times when that child is moving inside, it's not always pleasant. You know, there gets to be a point in the pregnancy where it really kind of becomes kind of hurtful, and you can't get a whole lot of sleep. And so here she has these two babies inside of her, and they're literally, they are struggling with each other. And as they struggle with each other, that we see that that relationship really carries on through the rest of their lives for the most part. And not only that, but also that you see that it carries on even to their ancestors. He mentions the fact that you don't just have two babies there, but this is prophecy, of course, about their lineage later on. You have two people. You have two nations inside you. And those two nations are going to struggle with each other. Normally in the Bible, we think of the older is served by the younger, but here he said, no, the older is going to turn around and serve the younger. This is going to be contrary to the way normal things normally are. And as it goes on, we find that even the name Jacob, if you go on down and read here, you find his name means supplanter, or basically one who takes the heel. And that is that he was going to be one that's going to struggle and fight against his brother. And so, again, their relationship was not a good one as you go through their lives here. And they were very different as far as boys also, that we often realize children are different. And so it is with these two. In verse 27 of Genesis 25, so the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, man of the field, but Jacob was a wild man dwelling in tents. And I will acknowledge here, I have a little problem sometimes reconciling this with Jacob we read on later on, because Jacob seems to be a man of the field also. As you take care of cattle later on and taking care of the livestock there, that was not an easy task. But here it kind of describes, you know, that sometimes boys, you know, they're just different. And me and my brother were quite a bit different. And so it is that you have one that the dad just likes, and you have the other one that hangs around the tent. Well, naturally, mom's going to like. And so that kind of gets us to the second kind of problem in Jacob's life, and that is that his parents wound up playing favorites. And that is, as you read on verse 28, and Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Now let's not take here the idea of that the parent hated the other one necessarily. Here the idea of love can mean to love less. And each one had their favorite, basically. And as you look at those relationships, honestly, if children realize, and children are pretty smart about picking up on things inside the family if one is favored over the other. And they're pretty quick to pick out that if mom was more on my side and I want something, who am I going to go to? I don't want to go to mom. And dad's on my side, who am I going to go to? I'm going to go to dad. And so we can see this here playing out in their lives. And so they were very different. And they used this sibling rivalry against each other and take advantage of one parent as it looks here in this relationship. And we can kind of point out here later on, we will, that you know, again, playing favorites in a family does not wind up being good. That there's a lot of bad things happen about because of that. But then as you go on, now those two things here, we can say Jacob really didn't cause the problems necessarily. In other words, Jacob was not the cause of being born with a twin. And Jacob isn't necessarily the cause of his parents playing favorites. But as you go on, we have this other event, another event happening. And that is, we all know here, of Esau selling his birthright for a bow of stew. And if you go on here in 25th chapter, verse 29, and it said, now, Jacob cooked the stew, and Esau came into the field, and he was weary. And Esau said, Jacob, please feed me that same red stew for I'm weary. Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob says, sell me your birthright as of this day. And Esau said, look, I'm about to die. So what is this birthright to me? Then Jacob says, swear to me of this day. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, rose, went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. And right again, another one of those events you stop thinking about. How many times have we been hungry? You know, we felt as if I'm so famished, I can't hardly move. I can't hardly, I won't be able to survive another 5 minutes if I don't get a Big Mac or something on that line. You know, some kind of food. I got to have something to eat. And Esau comes in like that. Now, I don't know if this is pure exaggeration. I tend to think that Esau is, yes, he's hungry. And yes, he wants food. And yes, he wants his bowl of stew. But as you look at it, we find that Jacob uses as opportunity. And one can argue that this was not really very brotherly of Jacob. I'll give you some food, but you know what it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you big time here. It's going to cost you your birthright. Now, most of us in that situation, we'll look at, Jacob said, that may be a good stew, but it ain't worth that. I may be hungry, but I'm not that hungry. However, Esau does exactly that. And that is, Esau just sells his birthright. And this meant something. And so it shows me at least that Esau really did not treasure that birthright at all. That maybe just took it for granted. That he is the older and he's going to receive the better blessing from his father. Whatever it was here, though, that he simply said, okay, I'll sell you my birthright for both food. And, of course, a lot of times when we make bad deals, what happens afterwards? We regret it. We really don't like the deal. And that's the same thing here about Esau. After he has his belly full, and after he thinks about what he's done here, he says he despised his birthright. And so there's a case here of, again, the sibling rivalry just continues on and becomes more in debt, or deeper, I should say, at this point here. Then they go on and we find another event here is that Jacob then tricks Isaac, his father, their father, and actually getting Esau's blessing. And as you read about this here in Genesis 25th chapter, it's obvious here that Isaac really does intend on blessing Esau. And he tells his son Esau, go out there, find game, find some wild game out there, kill it, cook it, and bring it back to me. Now think about that, as far as the time element here. That he's going to go out there and find some wild game. How long is this going to take? You don't know. It may be very quickly, it may take you a whole day, it may take you longer than that. Who knows how long it's going to take. But whenever you get it, come back and cook it and bring it back to me, and then I'll give you your blessing. Well, of course, Rebecca hears this. And Rebecca then goes into action. Because you look in verses 6 through 10. It says, so Rebecca spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, saying, bring me game and make savory food for me, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now, honestly, again, his attention is to bless Esau. And Jacob does. By this time, Jacob is old. He can't see. And basically, he thinks on a dying day. Now, keep in mind, actually, it turns out 20 plus years later on before he does die. But he thinks he's going to die pretty quickly. So verse 8 said, now, therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go down to the flock and bring me from there 2 choice kids of the goats. And I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then he shall take it to your father, he may eat it, that he may bless you before his death. So Rebecca steps in here, and again, just kind of see that, of course, you don't have the goats right there, that Jacob killed them pretty quickly. She's going to cook them and just take them right on to this father, Isaac. And so that's going to be a shorter time period. Now Jacob has some reservations about this. Obviously, that Jacob kind of realizes if my dad finds out what I'm up to here, then it won't be good for me. But she basically says, you know, put some camel skin on here or skin of animals so that when he touches you, he'll think you're a hairy man like Esau. And basically it works. And so everything works pretty good because that Jacob does receive this great blessing. A blessing that is very immense as you read in the 27th chapter. I'm not going to go into all detail this time, but it is a blessing basically that leaves almost nothing out as far as what Jacob will receive. And so this works pretty good, except for the fact of what happens next. And that is what happens next is that when Esau comes back, and Esau finds out that his brother Jacob had tricked his father in getting the blessing. In verse 41, so Esau hated Jacob because the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I'll kill my brother Jacob. Dad is about ready to pass away. As soon as he does, I'm going to kill this guy. I'm going to kill Jacob. Now, this is not one of those idle threats type of thing, because honestly, he meant it. Honestly, Rebecca understood. He meant this. And so the result then is Jacob has to leave home. And when, again, as we're just kind of going through life with Jacob, just seeing the things he goes through, Jacob, when he goes back to the homeland of Rebecca, comes across this family that involves a brother and his two daughters specifically. And he winds up meeting Rachel, and he falls in love with Rachel, and he gives an agreement with Laban to work for Rachel. And then 7 years, and then he can get married to her. But then, and what happens is, he gets the wrong wife. And as you look at Genesis 29, verse 16 through verse 20. Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name was the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. And this is one of those things we debate a lot of times as far as what does it mean that Leah's eyes were delicate. Some men thought that maybe that she had bad eyesight, she couldn't really see very well. Some believe it meant that they were very pretty, and she had very pretty eyes, but in comparison to Rachel, what it talks about her as far as basically her appearance and how beautiful she was, that beautiful foreign appearance. And so it goes on, saying, now Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. And Laban said, it's better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. They seem only a few days to him because of love they have for her. And all seems to be going very well until you get down to verse 23. And in verse 23 it said, now it came to pass in the evening, they took Leah, talking about Laban, took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went in to her. And so, again, kind of culturally, it's hard for us to kind of imagine this here. How in the world Jacob would not realize this was not Rachel, but it was the other girl, Leah. Except to point out, a lot of times, the light and the idea of the covering and things along that line, so that time period. But basically what happens is that he realizes, I got the wrong woman. And so he makes another agreement with Laban, I'm going to work another 7 years for Rachel. Which means now he's going to have two wives. And not only did he have two wives, but each wife came along with a handmaiden, Bilhah and Zilpah. Again, hard for us to understand the idea of the relationship between handmaidens and wives, because these women are going to wind up having children by Jacob. But it's one of social standing, largely. Much like concubines, reading the Bible, the reason they were concubines, not considered wives, was mainly because of what we today would call the caste system. And that they were lower a society than what you're used to, or what your society, or what you were, your social standing. And so you wouldn't be a full wife. You'd be lesser than a full wife. So they have these other two women involved here. But again, now again, part of the problem is you have four women involved here. Two wives and two handmaidens. And especially between the wives, we see this created a lot of strife and jealousy between those. Now you look at verse 30. It says to us, and Jacob went into Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. And just kind of underline that if you want to the Bible, he loved Rachel more. And you know who knew that? Leah knew that. Leah knew that she was playing second fiddle to her sister. Not only that, but Leah was the first wife. And as you go down here, we find that the sisters, in essence, get into a competition with each other as far as having children. Who can have the most children? Children, again, viewed as a blessing from God, your lineage would consider something very important to you. And so if Aaron gave the husband more children, was more blessed by God, would be more loved by her husband. And so that's what happens to these two. And as you look at it here in verse 32 and verse 34, and just read that with me, because Leah's one actually going to have the most children. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. And notice the next part here. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. Now, as we read through this here, I just have to feel for Leah here, because she understands she's really not loved by Jacob. As you go on verse 33, then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me his son, this son also. And she called his name Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne three sons. Therefore his name was Levi. And by the time you get the third son, she's not even using the word love. She said, he'll be attached to me. At least he will care for me. Because look here, I've had three sons. Now that's where the handmaids start coming in here, because as you look at it, they start to use those, have become surrogate moms in essence. And Rachel here, as you look at it, that Rachel, guess where she even blames Jacob, because she hasn't had any children yet. And Genesis 30 verse 1, so now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister. You know, so you have it going both ways. You have one sister feeling unloved. You have the other sister envying the other sister and said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. And Jacob's anger was roused against Rachel. And he said, am I in the place that God has withheld from you the fruit of the woman? What are you blaming me for? It's not my fault here. You're not a child. And then just show you how far this had gone. They had to get the point of bargaining over Jacob. He's going to be able to sleep with him that night. And in this case here, over mandrakes, because as you go, now read me here in Genesis 30 verse 14. Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest, found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter that take away my husband? Now again, notice here, the attitude each one. In this here case, you take my husband from me. You're the other woman in essence. And would you take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come into me, for I surely hired you my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. So they're even bargaining over Jacob. And then, and again, all of this here just kind of shows things are not good in this family. And then you throw in the Laban. And Laban here obviously is involved with Leah and Rachel. That Laban is one who says basically to Jacob, listen, I made a bargain with you for Rachel, but with our society, it's improper for us to have the young get married first. And so that's why I gave you Leah. Now, you would think during 7 years of Jacob working for Rachel, he would have mentioned that someplace. But it never really occurred to him. But you see that he basically deceives Jacob here, and even as business partners, because Jacob is working for Laban and his flocks and involved in the caretaking of the flock, and basically they don't trust each other. And as you read all the way through this here, you find that even kind of the breeding of the livestock, they have a deal with each other that Jacob's going to receive the speckled and the lesser pretty livestock, and it was supposedly be the weaker livestock, and Laban received the better. And Jacob basically through this process of rods and putting them before the livestock before they mate, that basically winds up having the speckled and the least pretty actually being the better livestock. And so they're really betraying each other. And then as you go on, we find in verse 38, there's how Jacob basically describes the relationship with Laban. Jacob leaves and tries to go back home, but Laban comes after him. And so this here, when Laban comes to the men, to Jacob and his livestock and his people, Jacob says, these 20 years I've been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, have not eaten the rams of your flock, That which was torn of a beast, I did not bring you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus have been your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your 2 daughters. 6 years for your flock. You have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac, have been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. Laban was told the night before, don't you hurt Jacob. And Jacob knew it. And just as you read the list there, you just see here that, again, the relationship. I worked hard for you. I did all these things for you. You didn't care a bit. And so as you go on here, then Jacob sins. Just kind of throw this in here, the mix here. And that is that he has 12 boys. And one of those, actually, Dinah goes out in Genesis 34th chapter to visit with the daughters of Laban, is how my translation kind of gives this account here. And Shechem, a son of basically the leader of the city, sees her and forces himself upon her, rapes her. And at that point here, we find that Shechem loves Dinah, though apparently is in love with her, and they kind of make a deal with the men of the city, and that is, okay, we can't give you our sister to marry unless you all are get circumcised. And so the men of the city do that, and then Simeon and Levi go in and kill everybody. And they take vengeance upon themselves and basically kill everybody. And we see that Jacob brings out a important point here in verse 30 at Genesis 34th chapter. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they would gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed and my household and I, but he treat our sister like a harlot? You see, they're justifying this because look how he treated her. But Jacob's saying, you know what? You just made everybody else around us hate us. Nobody around us is going to trust us. Nobody around us is going to enter into a deal with us now. We could get attacked any time. And then throw one more thing. Of course, we have selling Joseph into slavery. And that is, we read about that in Genesis 37, 31 through 34. So they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought to the father and said, we have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not? And he recognized and said, it is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, but sackcloth his waist, and mourned for his son many days. We often talk about how Joseph had the feel of knowing his brothers debating whether or not to kill him or not, and then sell him into slavery. Jacob here, as you look at this, you're thinking about the fact that the years of mourning Jacob did for his son. Thinking his son was dead all while these other boys know that he's not dead. We sold him in slavery. And so that would take a toll on somebody. And so as you look at this here, these are some of the things, I haven't even mentioned the death of Rachel and during the famine during this time period, but these are some of the trials. So when Jacob says, I've had the days been difficult and evil for me, I can understand what he's saying. And so we look at this here, and I'm not going to talk about Jacob's blessing, but what can we learn from Jacob's days of trouble? Let me just give you four some points in the last few years. The first one is, as I was reading through this, you realize how much of Jacob's problems because of the home? You realize how much of it just centered upon the home life Jacob that he grew up in, and the fact of his rivalry with his brother and then of his sons and how they treat each other. And even today, you stop thinking about our society. You know, each election and each time that there are government programs trying to help us live better lives and help take care of the societal problems we're having. And a lot of the problems we're having today is because we had destroyed the home in many communities. And in one way or another, that maybe it's not because of the work. Maybe it's simply the fact that parents playing favorites. As I said before, because children pick up pretty quickly that mom loves you more than me or dad loves you more than me, and they start playing parents off each other. That's always a recipe for disaster. I cannot think of a time when that's ever worked out good. And we need to recognize the difference between children and their needs and the fact that they don't have to be the same, but we need to not love one more than the other. Our homes need to be where children are brought up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, as Ephesians 6 verse 4 says. And that's one thing that just kind of stood out to me as far as how much of Jacob's problems really centered on the home here, starting off with. The saying is the danger of deception. A lot of times people are trying to get what they want by deception. That's Jacob here. Jacob deceives his father Isaac. And the passage there in Numbers 32 verse 23. But if you do not do so, then take note, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. How did Rebekah and Jacob think this was going to end whenever they conspired together to trick Isaac? How did they think this was going to be good? You know, what universe is this going to turn out to be all right as far as his relationship with Esau? Now, again, I know that God is using them as far as Jacob's blessed by God and God's going to make the nation from him. But just think about it. Sometimes today people think, if I can trick somebody and get anyone I want, if I can deceive people into getting what I want, that's okay. You know, by hook or by crook, we ought to say. And just realize deception has a cost to it. And when the other person realizes you deceive them, usually bad things happen. And so that's another lesson. I just thought about this. A third one is, marriage is a one-on-one relationship. They deviate from God's pattern, God's plan of marriage in the sense that you have two sisters, our wise sisters, and they envy one is envious of the other. The other feels unloved. And basically, this is not good. And again, a lot of times you see children are growing up in divorced homes or in broken up homes. And you think about in schools. Children have all kind of issues. They think, how come this child is like this? A lot of times just look at the home. Again, look at what they're growing up with. Look at the environment they're part of. And that explains a lot of the problems today. And then finally, in some way, the fact that God uses the imperfect. Because here God is, by his divine providence, that there's not any miracles involved here, but Jacob was far from a perfect person, as almost every other servant of God in the Bible. There's very few of them that you look at and say they didn't have some big issue someplace or did something wrong. And yet God used them. That's just what Jacob's doing here. Jacob is going to be the 12 tribes of Israel come from him. That Joseph bringing the family to Egypt is, again, saving the people from the famine and making them a great nation. The beginning of a nation that happens actually here in Genesis 47th chapter. God is using them. And so I'll just end here by just saying that if you have days of trouble, probably everybody has at one time or another, had their own days of trouble. But basically, as you have those days, you're not alone. But see the good that can come about from your days of trouble. See maybe the blessing that comes about because you have had trouble. And use those wisely. I appreciate your kind of attention this morning. And I'll just bring out to us that the key of our lives is always to grow closer to God. And what I'll see tonight is that Jacob's life does seem to go closer to God. And the same thing about us, that we need to obey him and do what's said here on the chart as far as believing in Jesus Christ, Son of God, if we have not done so. Repent of our sins, confess him as Son of God, and be baptized for remission of our sins. And therefore tonight, this morning, we can age in doing that. Won't you let us know as we stand, as we sing.